Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today, I'm very excited. We have a return guest, Laurent Bougnon. I've known Laurent for quite a while, and I still don't know how to say his name properly, so he'll have to help me with that. But if you're not familiar with him, he's a senior director for IdentityMine. He's one of the leading people in .NET and the creator of MVVM Lite, which I want to talk to him about how it has gone from being an interesting, almost experimental technology to best practices in a relatively short period of time. Laurent writes for MSDN Magazine and other publications. He codes in Windows, WPF, Xamarin, ASP.NET, and his blog is excellent and highly recommended. blogs.galesoft.ch, Laurent?
That is correct. Yeah, CH is the abbreviation for Switzerland, and that means Confederatio Helvetica, which is Latin, because since we speak a number of languages, it was easier to take, you know, Latin to make everybody happy.
Of course. Weenie, weenie, weechie.
Exactly.
Laurent is a frequent speaker at conferences such as Microsoft Mix, TechEd, VS Live, Tech Days. I understand you're going to be speaking at Evolve this year.
And that is correct. I'm returning at Evolve, and I'm really happy because I really liked speaking at Evolve in 2014. I think it's a great conference. And I just heard today that Steve Wozniak is going to be speaking there, which is amazing. It's the Woz, you know, so
that
really
is,
happy about that.
That's very exciting. And I have to
it
say
is.
That Evolve is one of my all-time favorite conferences. I'm also very excited to be speaking there. I got to tell you before we start my great Evolve story, which is that they put me in the big conference room, which is huge. And I was following Charles Petzold, who had filled the room.
Of course.
And then it was my turn to speak. And just before I did, it was like a scene from Exodus. It was extraordinary. And then there were about nine people left. And it was hello.
My story of the same kind, when I spoke at Mix the very first year, I had a session and I was not that experienced in speaking, and I was really happy to be speaking at Mix. And unfortunately, I had on the same time slot as myself, I had two concurrent. I had, I believe it was Scott Guthrie, the goo, right? Speaking about, I forget what, but probably ASP.NET or something. Mm-hmm. And then the real killer is another track was having the guys who developed the Playboy application, and they were speaking about the Playboy app. And so I think I had probably like 10 people in the room, and most of them were coworkers who were like too embarrassed to go into the Playboy thing, you know? So yeah, I feel for you. Yeah.
That's a great story. That one trumps mine. So there are so many things I want to talk to you about. I'm particularly interested in talking to you about the evolution of MVVM Lite, and in particular its usage in Xamarin, because I'm working on a project right now that is using MVVM Lite with Xamarin Forms.
Very cool.
And you could argue, I think, that you could do MVVM with Xamarin Forms without any additional library. But mm-hmm. we have chosen to add MVVM Lite for a number of reasons, not least of which is the relay command. And mm-hmm. There are a couple other pieces that we're making very good use of.
Yeah, that's something I see quite a lot, actually. And it's true that the Xamarin people have bundled basically a bunch of classes which are pretty good. And maybe in some cases, it's really all you need. And I've never been very pushy with my stuff. So, you know, the stuff I do is basically built in a way that you can use parts of it, but not everything if you don't want to. And so that works great. And for example, I heard people who are using Prism, for example, on the Windows side, but they still use MVVM Lite for the MVVM stuff, right? And both really work well together. So it's not a problem. And so on the Xamarin Form side, my take on that is I would say, you know, the stuff they have bundled is good enough if you are doing something which is just going to be in Xamarin Forms, because their classes are not portable, so you cannot really use them on Windows, for example, or on classic Xamarin. So if you wanted to do something which is really going to be ported to, you know, Xamarin iOS, Xamarin Android, or even WPF, or even Windows 10, or Windows Phone, or other things, then the Xamarin Forms classes are probably not the best, right? So then probably you want to use a framework. So that's one scenario. And the other scenario, which is probably what is going on in your case, is that for people who know MVVM Lite well, using it in Xamarin Forms is almost trivial because it's exactly the same than using it on Windows, especially with XAML binding frameworks and all that. So basically, the learning curve is almost nil. And so it does make sense, I think. But, you know, it's an open world, right? So everybody is free to choose what they want.
Yes. The one place I disagree with you a little bit is that you were saying that Forms doesn't apply to Windows Phone or Windows Universal, but...
Well, yeah, sorry, I misspoke. What I meant with that is that if you want to do, and I could imagine some scenarios in which you want to do that, if you wanted to do a classic Windows Phone application, right, the mm-hmm. it was a full-blown thing with native UI, and if you wanted to do a classic Xamarin Android application with a native UI, and for some reason you also want to have Xamarin Forms, for example, basically you want to touch so many platforms, right? That would be a scenario. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Xamarin Forms out of the box, if you build it, you're going to be able to deploy to a Windows Phone, which is not exactly the same thing that I was talking about, right?
Right. No, absolutely. Now, before we got started, you said something about data binding and Xamarin.
Yeah.
And can you talk to me a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, sure. So basically, MVVM is a pattern which makes a lot of sense if you have data binding. And if you don't have data binding, suddenly MVVM kind of loses quite a lot of its appeal, mostly because you're decoupling your layers, and especially the view layers and the view model layer, and then you're kind of binding them together with a data binding framework, which is a loose coupling system, right? So you're going to say, hey, you're going to declare in advance that this property has to be synchronized with that property. So property of the view with a property of the view model typically. And of course, if you want to do that, you need a little bit of infrastructure. And in Windows XAML, which is where it all started, we have a very powerful data binding system, which is, you know, came out in around 2005, 2006. So basically it's 10 years old. So it's well known. And they keep working at it because now we have a compiled binding system, which just came out in Windows 10. So it's the XBind markup extension. So it's also another iteration, I would say, on the data binding system. And in Xamarin Forms, they also came up with a data binding system. So the syntax is just a little bit different, but it's for the most part, it's almost the same. And so you can declare your binding directly in XAML. Unfortunately, there is no data binding system in Xamarin Android. There is no data binding system in Xamarin iOS. And there is, if you want to compare, there is no data binding system in HTML and JavaScript, okay? And so this is why frameworks such as AngularJS or before that KnockoutJS came out and bring with them a data binding syntax and allow you to bind your HTML to your JavaScript. So basically, this is MVVM applied to HTML and JavaScript. And so in Xamarin Android and Xamarin iOS, which is where we also don't have a data binding system, we also came out, well, we came up basically with the same type of scenario, which is adding an external framework, in my case, MVVM Lite, but MVVM Cross does that as well, for example. And this external framework allows you to create data bindings. And in order to create data bindings, there are different scenarios. MVVM Cross allows you to declare those bindings in the XML for Android, the so-called AXML in Xamarin Android. I don't do that mostly because, first of all, it's not portable to iOS, so I decided, you know, not really to go that route. And you know, there are a few issues, like, for example, you don't have IntelliSense, you don't really have syntax check. So it's quite easy to mistype something and to make errors. So at the moment, I'm not saying I will never do that, but at the moment, I'm not supporting data binding in XML. But I do, however, support data binding in code. So you can basically go into your code, into your controller in iOS or into your activity in Android, and then write something like this.setBinding, and then basically you create a binding between two properties. It's a nice syntax. I spent actually quite a lot of time on the syntax trying to make it close enough to the XAML, to the Windows XAML syntax, that people who come from there are not totally lost. It's relatively easy to understand the terms. But I brought a few improvements here and there where I thought that, you know, some words were not maybe clear enough for the user, or in other places it made better sense to use other terminology. And my good friend Corrado Cavalli helped me tremendously on that. I speak with him a lot. He's also a longtime user of MVVM Lite, and so we keep brainstorming about IDs and naming and stuff like that. And right now I'm basically improving all that. I debugged quite a lot because data mining framework is actually pretty complex. It's a lot of things to observe, especially if you have some complex property expressions, like, for example, my view model dot my model dot my property, for example. It's already a three-level property expression, so that can be fairly complex to observe. But right now it's working pretty well. Actually, I'm quite happy with the thing that I did there.
Well, having data binding in native iOS and native Android through Xamarin and through MVVM Lite strikes me as a significant breakthrough and improvement, because data binding has become so important to those of us who are used to XAML. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to tremendously reduce the amount of work and overhead in building an iOS application.
Yeah, I think so. It's it has pros and cons, right? So the pros are fairly straightforward, in the sense that for people who have used data binding before, there is a way of thinking which is different, in the sense that you create your view models, you create your views, and then you bind them together. And so it's kind of a step-by-step approach, which is very, very soothing, I find. And it really allows you to put your developer hat when you worry about the view model, but then to put kind of a designer or integrator type of hat when you do the view, and not really step on each other's toes, which is really nice. Also, if you work with teams, it's really good, because you can have one team working on one layer and another team on another layer, and then connect the dots later. So that's pretty cool. The cons are obviously when you do some reflection, and data binding is, you know, based on reflection in every framework. So I talked also to the people who do data binding, who wrote the data binding system in XAML, and it's the same type of things. Everybody has the same issues, basically. When you do some type of reflection, you're going to have a little bit of a slowdown, so that's going to take a little bit of perf. So you need to think about that. So I always say, use it with care. It does make sense in many places, and in other places it makes a lot less sense, and so you always have to be a little bit pragmatic and take the best approach. But when you can use it, and really when you build your view, when you build your elements, and then you start binding your status text and your spinners for the please wait and your stuff like that, it totally makes sense to use binding on those elements, because it's so much easier later.
So give me an example of a place where I might be tempted to use data binding, but I shouldn't.
Well, typically, perf issues come up when you are working with lists. And so lists are always a little bit tricky, because you end up with quite a lot of UI elements on the screen. And so if we take an iOS application, for example, so you're going to have your table view controller, and then you're going to have a cell, and this cell is going to be replicated a number of times. And the biggest issue that you have here is that the people in iOS have been very, very clever, and they implemented virtualization, which is basically reusing some cells and making sure that only a minimum number of cells is instantiated at a certain time, because you don't want to overload the memory, right? And so in the background, there is really a lot of stuff which is happening, meaning that every time you scroll up and down, the cell which disappears from the screen is going to be recycled, and then it's going to be reused on top, yes, for the next cell which appears, right? And so that means that all your UI elements which are in the cell have to be reinitialized, if you want. They are not going to be reinstantiated, because they already exist, but basically you have to reset everything and to reinitialize everything. And so these type of scenarios can be a little bit tricky to work with data binding, because basically, first of all, it's going to take some time to basically reattach the binding to a new object, to a new item, okay? And also it's going to you're going to have to deal with the fact that you have to detach the binding and reattach it. And so that can be a little bit tricky. And maybe those scenarios, I would say here we have to be a little bit careful with that probably.
Tell me a little bit about what has happened with MVVM Lite in the last few months and what's coming soon.
Sure. Well, you know, so basically I released version 5.2 last year. And 5.2 was actually quite a good version. I was quite happy about that because it was a version where I took some time to slow down a little bit and to basically polish quite a lot of stuff. And that made me really happy. And 5.3, which is a version that I'm working on right now, is something like that also, but rather on the data binding side. So basically, this is a big introspection, if you will, where basically I dive deep into my code, and the data binding system is the newest code that I have. So it is the most recent. It was released the first time in 2014, so it's already 1 year old, more or less, a little bit more than 1 year old. But still, you know, there is still some stuff that I can improve. And so I went based on bug reports or feedback from users, or just diving deep into the code and checking what I can improve. That's what I'm working on now. And since now it's winter, it's a good time because I don't have conferences or other things which keep me away from coding, basically. I always code, but you always have a plane flight or whatever, something like that, at least, right? But still, it's a little bit less busy time, so it's a good time to do these kind of things. So my goal is to be done with version 5.3 probably in a few weeks, I would say. In any case, before Evolve, because I want to show the new stuff at Evolve. There is a little bit of syntax which changed. It didn't really change, but basically it is improved. And there are a few new objects and new controllers, stuff like that, which are interesting. So I want to show that at Evolve. So Evolve is end of April. But I think I will be probably done with version 5.3 before that. So I'm thinking somewhere in the March timeframe. And March is build. And so that's a good time also to release something probably. This is what I'm doing. And after that, I still have a list of outstanding bugs and feedback and stuff like that. I don't have that many bugs anymore, really, but I still have probably something like 10 or 12 items in my backlog that I would like to touch. And then I probably have something like 50 items in my backlog, which are mostly ideas for maybe improving that feature or this feature, or maybe changing the syntax a little bit to make it more friendly. And there are a couple of new ideas also for, new objects and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's always always fun to work on it. I really like it.
How much time would you say you put into it?
Oh, my. I don't really know. It's very irregular because it's not rare that there is sometimes a couple of months where I almost don't touch it, mostly because I'm busy traveling or conferencing or writing. I just wrote two articles for MSDN Magazine about the OneDrive API, for example, which had nothing to do with MVVM at all. So that was kind of refreshing to do stuff which is not related. Or I'm, doing stuff for Pluralsight like you do as well. You do it a lot more than me, but still. So those things take time. So sometimes there are a few months where I almost don't touch it. I just maintain the backlog, like making sure that issues are make sense. If I have bug reports or stuff like that, I take a look to make sure that I'm not breaking something for somebody or answering emails. So that is probably, at least a few hours a week. But when I'm really coding, like now, I'm probably spending, it's probably, not quite a job, but half a job, maybe, in addition to my main job, which is, of course, quite a lot of hours. But it's a fun thing because it's really, it's really code, right? So it's not work. It's just very, very pleasing.
Well, as long as you don't need to sleep, yeah, I think that works out great.
I didn't find the trick to not sleep. I think there are drugs who do that.
You don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to do that. I'm blessed that I don't really need many hours of sleep, so that's good. And I like to work at night, so it's really good. But one thing which is really cool, actually, I work from home. And so it's really a blessing, because it's amazing how many hours I save on on commuting, really. And recently I was working on a project which led me to be 2 days a week in Zurich Airport. And I live in Zurich, but still it's like 45 minutes away. So back and forth, it's about 1.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed at how tired I was at night. And so I'm not saying, you know, that working from home is the best. It's good for some people. It's less good for the people. And there are definitely plus and minuses, right? What I notice is that when I work from home, I'm less tired in the evening. And so that allows me to put some hours. And it's not rare that I work until 1 a.m. or something like that. So, you know, like this, you can do stuff. And that's cool.
Yes, I've been working at home for over 20 years. And it would be very hard to drag me back into an office.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day as well. It's funny because about 6 months ago, I was starting to think, oh, yeah, maybe someday I'd like to go back to an office and all that. And then after that, I was brought to this client and doing the commuting thing and thinking, wow, I'm not ready yet. You know, I want to go back home. But yeah.
Yeah, you do give up something. You give up some of that opportunity to exchange ideas with people, you know, hallway conversations and such.
That is correct. And in fact, I think that if I ever go back to an office, which is, you know, very possible at some point, I'm thinking that it's probably because of the human contact and the face-to-face. And honestly, I mean, the airport gig was really cool. You know, it's working in the airport is kind of nice because we had really great offices with view on the runways, and I'm an aviation buff, so I love the, you know, watching planes and all that. So at times it was kind of hard to work, but but we did, you know, great work. So really happy about that. So the setting was cool and the people were nice. And it's true that it's nice sometimes to, you know, go and have a coffee with somebody and talk about stuff, right? And from home, I could go and have coffee with friends or colleagues or whoever is in Zurich, but it's like, half an hour train ride. So mostly I don't really do it much. So yeah, you lose that. That's true.
Now, you're going to be traveling quite a bit and talking at a number of conferences. Do I have that right coming up in the next few months?
Yeah, that's correct. I have a few things coming up. Actually, the first one is in Switzerland, and we are Microsoft, right? are rebooting Tech Days. So it's really cool because we didn't have Tech Days in Switzerland for a few years. It was replaced by something which was called Tech Talks, which was kind of, I really liked doing Tech Talks because it was a little bit more spontaneous and much smaller rooms. Like, you know, we had at most, we had like 80 people in the room, which was already not bad, but sometimes it was more like 10 or 20 people, which was cool. So I did a few of those Tech Talks with other Microsoft people. It was a nice opportunity, but Tech Days is special because it's like the big reunion, you know, where you see people that you work with, and maybe you see them like once a year, and it's a really cool thing. And the nice thing at Tech Days, actually, I'm going to pimp it up. There is Eric Gamma is going to be giving the keynote, and for people who don't know Eric Gamma, he's a great guy. He's one of the Gang of Four, so the design pattern book that everybody had at some point on his shelf.
Still do.
And still do, exactly. It's still a very current book. And so he's one of those. And he's working for Microsoft now and working actually out of Zurich, Switzerland. So he's my neighbor. We joked the other day that I can see his office from my window. So it's pretty cool. And his team worked on the VS Code, you know, the new lightweight version, lightweight code editor, I would say, mm-hmm. Which is called Visual Studio Code. And this is running on Linux and Windows and Mac. And so his team developed that and he's going to do the keynote. So I'm really happy to see him talk there. And so that will be Tech Days. I will be speaking about Windows 10 there. And then after that is Build. So of course, Build is for us, a good occasion to go there and listen to the newest stuff in the Microsoft realm and meet people who are important there. And after that, it's going to be Xamarin Evolve. We talked about that. And then there is Techorama, and Techorama is a really cool conference. Have you been to Techorama?
No, I've never been.
Oh, you should definitely submit at some point. Techorama is a great conference. It's a conference put together by people from the community. My good friend Jill Claren, who you also know, mm-hmm. right? Also a Pluralsight author, is helping there, and a few other guys, really great guys. And the nice thing is that it's really put together by the community. So those are all, you know, user group leaders and frequent conference speakers and everything. And basically they did that because there was no tech days anymore at some point because of budget restrictions. And so they put together a new conference, and it has grown quite a lot. It's been a pretty cool gig with, I don't know how many attendees they have, but multiple hundreds of attendees, definitely. So it's a big thing.
Sounds great.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. It's in May. And then I'll be at DevSum in Sweden. This is also in May. And DevSum is a small conference. I've never been, but I've heard some very good things. It's in Stockholm, and so that should be fun as well. And after that, I'll be at VS Live. So I'm going to... Actually, you're in Boston, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm coming to see you.
Great. We have a guest room.
So you're all set. Well, I don't want to invite myself, but I didn't quite book my travels yet, but it's going to be fun. I've been to Boston only once so far, so looking forward to come back, and that will be in June.
All right. Well, that's great. We'll definitely talk offline
awesome.
And get you out here. We're actually in the suburbs of Boston.
Oh, very cool.
And maybe we can spend some time looking at the city as well. It is a nice little city.
I had the occasion to take a stroll through Boston, but I didn't really know where to go. So I was kind of, you know, wandering around, and I really had a good time. It's a really beautiful city, yeah.
Yes, very livable. A little city is just because I grew up in New York, so everything's a little city.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm in Zurich, so, it's probably quite big for me.
Now, you said that you're going to be focusing on Windows 10 in one of those talks. What's the part of Windows 10 that you'll be looking at?
Well, so mostly I'm going to focus on the universal aspect of Windows 10 applications. And, there are some things, well, I guess... With Windows 10, this is really the first time that we have something which I would call truly universal coming out of Microsoft. We have had some stuff which was working fairly well on different platforms by using some kind of tricks like sharing files or using some portable class libraries. But you still had those two heads, right? Those two UI projects like Windows Phone project and Windows Store project. And you still had the two stores. So you had to do two binaries, and you had to submit twice, and you had to do all the assets, all the marketing material, everything twice, and that was really annoying. And now with Windows 10 Universal, you have basically the possibility to really develop your code and create one binary only, one package, submit it once to one store, and then that's going to be able to be downloaded to Windows Mobile, or to Windows 10, so basically Surface or Surface Book or whatever desktop PC is running Windows 10. And of course, they are also adding a Surface Hub, which is those big computers that you hang on the wall in meeting rooms and stuff like that, fully multi-touch and interactive, and those are really pretty awesome devices. Xbox is coming up as well. We don't really know exactly when it's going to be public, but... there is something going on there as well. And, they even said that HoloLens is running Windows 10, basically. So it's a Windows 10 computer as well. And we already saw some demos where we see some Windows 10 applications like Skype or, the video player or stuff like that running on these type of computers as well. And so the thing which is quite exciting is that you still need to take into account the usability. And of course, if you have an application which is running on a desktop PC, it's going to have different constraints than the application running on Windows Mobile, for example, because first of all, the screen, of course, is a lot smaller, but also all the things, like for example, you're outside in the sun and then suddenly it's, it's reflecting and you should probably use a darker theme with more contrast. And there are other things as well, like you have less, real estate, and maybe you're going to have to split your application in multiple pages. And basically, there are a whole lot of things that you need to take care of when you do these kind of things. And so that is pretty much the focus of the talk. It's like showing to people, okay, you know, Windows 10 Universal Application is still fairly new. People don't really know what to expect when they hear about that. And maybe they hear, oh, it's universal. Yeah, we heard that already before. It's probably not going to work, you know, this kind of thing. And so I'm hoping to show that, well, first of all, it works. This time it's real. This time we really have something which allows you to, you know, with a minimum amount of changes to run your application on the phone or on the desktop computer, etc.
What we used to call write once and debug everywhere.
Yeah, and that has been, honestly, you know, I did a fair lot of Java when I was young, long time ago. And yeah, that was really, you know, the promise. And then, you know, we have the same promise with JavaScript and HTML, and everybody knows that, well, it's not quite as simple as that, right? And so, you know, with Windows 10, it's definitely still not as simple as that. And you definitely still have to do a few things in the UI at least. But I would say that the tools we have now are, you know, mature enough and are really... Also, the techniques, I think we know how to do adaptive layout now. You know, we have done this on the web, and we have done this on many places, and Windows 8 as well for those of us who did applications there. And so now we know how to do that, and basically it's nice to be teaching other people how to do that, because this is definitely the direction where everybody is going. And, you know, if you think about, I mean, even in iOS, right, you have universal applications in iOS as well, where you do one binary and then you have two storyboards, one for the iPhone and one for the iPad, for example. So it's the same type of thing. So it's fairly, it's quite a universal concept, I would say. Everybody's kind of using the same approach. And I think it totally makes sense to look a little bit deeper into what is, you know, helping us to do that in Windows. And so, yeah, it's a cool thing. And I'll be also showing actually the Continuum, which is really exciting me. So I have a Lumia 950 XL, which is the big one. And at first I saw, well, the Continuum is probably going to be more of a gimmick. But I tried it out and I'm very impressed, I have to say. And so the Continuum is this feature where you can basically project your phone on an external monitor, and it's going to adapt. The applications are going to adapt themselves to the size. And like I said before, right, those applications are universal. So basically the only thing which is different is the screen size. And by using the same techniques that you use when you port your application on a desktop computer, you can basically take your application running on the phone. So the phone is the computer, but you have an external display like, you know, 1920 times 1080 or whatever size, and it's going to fill the whole space. And you have... Basically, you can also even connect a mouse and a keyboard over Bluetooth, for example, and then you're going to be able to use your phone as a lightweight computer, which is, I think, is a really nice feature of Windows 10. So I'm quite excited about that. So there are a few things that you need to take care of when you do applications for that, and really any Windows application can run in Continuum. So it's not limited to Microsoft apps or anything. Anyone can do that. And so I'm going to show how to do that, and you can do that using a Miracast wireless display stick. So basically one of those HDMI stick that you plug into a monitor, and then after that you can connect wirelessly your phone. Or there is also this thing called the Continuum Dock, and this is a wired connection using USB-C. And I'll be demonstrating that and basically putting a Windows 10 application on it and showing that. And finally, we'll be speaking also a little bit about the bridges, which is the possibility you have to take applications, for example, from iOS and recompile them to make them run on Windows 10. So basically, you build Objective-C into Visual Studio, and then you put it on a Windows 10 device.
Well, obviously, you've been too narrowly focused and not at all interested in various topics.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, every time you have new stuff coming up, it's like, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? Because you have the feeling that you have to relearn everything.
Yes.
And yeah, it's, you know, it's what keeps our job interesting, I guess, but it's also what keeps our job scary at times. And I definitely have that at times where I think, oh, wow, okay, I'm not sure I want to relearn everything that, you know, forget everything I learned and relearn everything, basically. But I have to say, recently it's been better. Like the stuff that we get on Windows 10, basically it's XAML. So if you have some XAML experience, you know, doing a Windows 10 application is really fairly easy. You just have to take care of a few things. And, you know, the XAML we have now is very, really close to the Silverlight XAML that we had before. And you and I actually met when we were doing Silverlight, I guess.
Yes.
Probably about eight or nine years ago, I think. But yeah, so, you know, for us, it's not that bad, really. And the learning curve is not that big. And then after that, if you do Xamarin, which is like a whole new world, because you have, wow, you know, running on iOS, running on Android, it's kind of scary. But at the same time, at least you have this basis of C#. And so that's really a good anchor where you can say, okay, at least I know that, right? I know an HTTP client. I know, you know, JSON.NET. I know MVVMite for people who use that. So I guess that helps, you know, the learning curve to be a little bit less steep. And if you do Xamarin Forms, it's very similar to really XAML stuff. So it's not really that bad. So yeah, it's been a little bit better for us.
One of the things that I want to do, and I'm hoping you and I can do it soon, is to have a podcast where we talk about the fundamentals of MVVM Lite, because we have gotten to the point where it is so pervasive that we assume folks know every aspect of it, or most of the aspects of it, except what's very new. And I suspect that there's a generation of folks coming up who don't know MVVM Lite, or have even been in the industry for a long time and still don't know it because they didn't happen to need it.
Sure.
So one of these days, soon, we should start with the assumption that we're going to begin at the beginning and talk about what it's for and how it works, and talk through some of the details of relay commands and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be fun. That said, I want to point out that the Perl side course I put out is basically very much that, right? So it's starting from scratch, explaining, you know, MVVM. There are other courses who explain MVVM, so I don't go, you know, I don't really detail every little single aspect of the pattern, and I don't go much into MVC, etc. But I definitely go deep into the components. And so I really review all the components, including, you know, relay command, messenger, and view model base, and even simple stuff that, you know, nowadays you and I, we have been doing that for many years. And so we assume that, okay, that's something that we know almost by heart. But yeah, for people who don't know that, you have to start at scratch, you know, start from scratch and learn everything from scratch, and that can be daunting. So the Perl side course, I'm actually fairly happy, and honestly very happy with the course, because it has allowed me to do something which I wanted to do for a very long time, which is put out a documentation for beginners. And not just for beginners, but also for beginners. Well, basically, if people start from the first module, they start from zero. And even though it's a subscription, and so, you know, you people who want to invest time into learning also maybe have to invest a little bit of money, but it's not that much. And really having this medium out there helped me to have something which is complete. So I'm quite happy about this one. I'm working about more stuff for Perl side, so I don't really want to talk about it right now because it's still early, but definitely in the direction of Xamarin, so that's something which is interesting as well. But the fundamentals one, it's a good title, right? It's really fundamental. If you start there, you should be good.
So is the title of the course Fundamentals of MVVM Lite?
Yeah, MVVM Lite Fundamentals is a title.
On Perl side.
On Perl side, exactly.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Maybe.
Well, highly recommended. I haven't even seen it, and I highly recommend it because I know how good you are at explaining this.
Well, thanks. It was a lot of fun to put out, and it's been out for a while now, for about a couple of years, I think. And it's very popular. I'm really happy with the result, and I keep hearing good things about it. I also have, if people go to MSDN Magazine and check my author page there, simply by searching my name, you can find also a series of articles I wrote, which basically are kind of the same content, but, you know, of course, explained less deeply, because in an MSDN article, you have less space to go deep into every detail. But it's also a good, basically, I would say a good place to start if you're not totally sure, hey, is this MVVM thing, is MVVM naturally for me or not? It's probably a good place to start and checking the samples and all that.